This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
John Whitehead is the co-founder and the CEO of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org, and he joins me live in studio. It's good to see you. How are you?
Hey, fine.
Can we talk about your arm?
Sure.
You are before me in a sling, my friend.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago I was jogging at ACAC and I tripped and fell down and broke my collarbone.
Oh.
I mean, cracked it, fractured it. Didn't break all the way through.
Oh, God.
This is my second week in a sling and it's uncomfortable. If you've ever had a broken collarbone, it's not
fun. I don't see how you sleep. I mean, just because you could roll over
on
it.
They gave me some pretty powerful drugs, but I don't like them, so I do aspirin.
Yeah.
And a couple aspirin.
I'm so sorry that happened.
I haven't slept well for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Now, had you ever broken a bone before? Did you know?
No. Well, you know, little fractures in fingers. This is the biggest thing, I think. So I broke my ankle once playing sports, but it's not comfortable.
Yeah. And I know it's challenging for you because you like to work out a lot, and you're a runner, and you play basketball, and now you just have to hold off on most.
And I'm a workaholic. Yeah. I haven't missed a beat, so I just keep working.
Speaking of working, let me ask you at the top here for an update on the case of the young man who went through the Richmond airport, took off his shirt to reveal part of the Fourth Amendment written on his torso. What happened with that, and what's the latest?
Yeah, Aaron Toby, Charlottesville resident, I think Albemarle High School. Was it Albemarle? Western Albemarle.
Yeah, Western.
Yeah. And he's a fifth-year architecture student, University of Cincinnati. A couple weeks ago, he was going through the Richmond airport. He dropped his pants right before he's ready to go through the scanner, by the way, the full-body scanner, and took his shirt off, and on his chest he had the part of the Fourth Amendment written, the part about unreasonable searches and seizures. And he was going to put his shirt on, by the way, very respectful, and then go through. But they grabbed him very quickly, took him through the metal detector, handcuffed him, and for an hour and a half he was interrogated by FBI agents and federal marshals about terrorism. And we stepped in with an attorney we knew down in Richmond, a very good one, Steve Benjamin, top criminal defense lawyer, and we got the charges dismissed, and now we're preparing to file a First Amendment lawsuit on his behalf, because I do think he has a right to do that. We had a photographer go down to the Richmond airport, and this was amazing. I just saw the photos yesterday. It was my idea. I said, just see what's on the walls down there, like people vacationing. They have women running around in bathing suits, guys with no tops on. Then we perused other pictures. There was a lot of that stuff. So basically a lot of semi-nude people in the airport. And then you look at the magazine racks, and you've got people with virtually no clothes on and cleavage. So what was displayed in the airport was much worse than anything that he did. But,
yeah,
he was respectful. He had running shorts on, very respectful. He said, yes or no, sir. So
what's significant about this, we're talking with John Whitehead. The phone lines are open, 977-1070. You're announcing this here for the first time, I think publicly, that the Rutherford Institute will indeed file charges on his behalf. You got the charges against him dismissed.
The criminal charges.
Right.
Which was disorderly conduct. The statute they charged him under specifically said conduct leading to violence. And he just stood there and said, yes, sir, no, sir. And he was going to put his shirt back on, but they wouldn't let him. So that was...
So clearly he was not instigating or even calling on any violence whatsoever.
He was making a First Amendment statement, yes.
Yeah. But again, just to underscore this, the Rutherford Institute will seek to file charges on his behalf and a case that his First Amendment rights were indeed violated.
Yeah, we have a legal team already
he was
aligned,
silenced.
Signed up. Yeah, the lawyers are already lined up and ready to go, and we're preparing the complaint at this time.
Yeah, now tell me about that case. He obviously has a strong case. I mean, when you stand up to make a First Amendment protest and to be heard, he was instantly silenced by his government. He was handcuffed.
Instantly silenced. I mean, depends,
taken off
know,
to
the,
a private room.
Yeah. The area he was in is a high-security area, supposedly. There's less freedom there, but we're going to be looking at that and how that affects the lawsuit. But I do think, by the very fact of what was in the airport and all the expressive activity going on, that, you know, what would it matter if he had walked through with a T-shirt saying the Fourth Amendment? Same thing, I mean. So, but he didn't disrupt anybody. I mean, again, he dropped him real quick and was going to get right on the scanner. And he'd already put his luggage through and had his shoes off, so... It's a classic, what I'd say, the things that we used to do back in the 1960s called the theater of the absurd. It's theater.
Yeah.
You make your point, and then you go on. And It's like people that I see arrested all the time that in weird situations. There's another case we may step into. A lady was in the gallery when they were reading the Constitution up at Congress a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I heard about
that. And to the point where they got to the point where they said a president must be a natural-born citizen. She's a birther. I don't agree with the birther issue, but she jumped up and said, except Obama.
Yeah.
Immediately they grabbed her, took her out, handcuffed her, and charged her with a crime, which... I don't know. Looking at that, I just got to think, where are we headed? There was a time when the police didn't do those kind of things. Now they automatically handcuff you almost every situation. So yeah. Why not just take her outside the room and say, nice, go on your way. Or Aaron Toby, just say, put your shirt on, dude, go through the scanner.
Yeah.
If he'd refused to go through the scanner at that point, I'd said, yeah, call in the security.
And John, it wasn't even by definition, it wasn't even civil disobedience. He was... obeying. He was doing
everything they asked
him to do at every point along the way. So it's not even civil disobedience. He was just making a statement.
No, he wasn't doing civil disobedience. So he's very, very courteous. Yes.
Yeah. So this, of course, this will continue to make national news, I would assume, as you launch a First Amendment case.
I would call it very much what people call a test case. It's a case to see how much our rights are protected in certain areas in the United States. The First Amendment's really clear. You have free speech, but it also says you have a right to peacefully assemble, which Aaron Toby did, and petition your government for a redress agreement. And that's exactly what he was doing. But, I mean, he wasn't committing civil disobedience. So I just think the overreaction is... That's the thing I'd like to temper in America, the overreaction by federal agents, local police and stuff, grabbing people and handcuffing them. Because I've talked to people who have been handcuffed, older folks, and it's traumatic. It takes them a while to get over it.
Well, an hour and a half without a lawyer there to represent you, being questioned like that.
When asked if you were a terrorist. And again, and with today's technology, all you have to do is Google his name. He's a white kid with a beetle haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Even your profiling is ridiculous.
But that is one of your central messages that I certainly agree with, that we as free citizens in this democracy that is struggling to safeguard its democracies, and I think the right and the left both agree in that regard, we need to push back in those instances where we see a little heavy-handedness.
Heavy-handedness.
Or even a lot of heavy-handedness.
We're seeing it today, The TSA agents, generally, as I see them, and I'm not coming down them generally, but most of the ones we see are not well trained. They need to be better trained. They need to treat us like we're citizens. That's the thing about the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment's there. It says that we are to be secure in our persons, our homes, you know, and our places.
And our effects, our papers,
everything. And unless a judge has looked at it and issued a warrant based on probable cause. And what the Fourth Amendment says essentially is we are to be treated like human beings by government authorities. And that doesn't mean slapping handcuffs on when there's no reason to. And I've encouraged police that I've talked to, hey, in certain situations, just leave people outside or drop them off at home. Why arrest them? There's really no reason to do that. And it's so quick to do it today. But these kind of situations with Aaron Toby, absolutely no reason. He was ready to go through the scanner. So that one I don't understand.
We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. He is live in studio. John, tell us about your recent commentary regarding this plan about the Obama administration's plan regarding the Internet. What is this all about?
Yes, I think it's a detailed commentary. I suggest you go to our website at rutherford.org and read it. It's called The Identity Ecosystem, Obama's Plan for Internet Control. And the Obama administration has been building up for a while to what they're calling a universal Internet ID. And that's basically what the proposal is. It's a strategy that was basically masterminded by the Department of Homeland Security. Supposedly, it will be handled by the Department of Commerce now. And the reason I think that's happening because people are a little bit frightened by the Department of Homeland Security and all their computers and the National Security Agency. So, but with today's sharing among governmental agencies, the Department of Homeland Security will be greatly involved or may be running it. But what it basically is going to do, it's supposedly would streamline the process of doing business online by replacing the various login names and passwords currently used to access personal accounts and information on various websites with a universal ID number. So, for example, if you go to the doctor, you would just take your cell phone and put it into their computer, press up a computer, and it would click into everything. So it'd just be one ID in your access. That's how you would access any kind of account, the internet or whatever. I pose some various dangers to this particular season, a particular system. The first thing I noticed is that if for some reason they wanted to deny you access, you could not buy, sell, move in society. And that's obvious. So it could be a very limiting process. But again, I've got a number of warning signs in the particular commentary, but it would open it up for, you know, there have been a lot of hacking in systems. I think it would actually make it easier for hackers to get into your accounts.
So you would have one ID that would that would be your universal ID for everything you do on the internet, every bank account, everything, instead of all the different IDs and passwords that we all have now for all these various things. This would be one, and it would be
one government approved ID, which means the government would have all access to everything you do. If you buy a book, if you go to Victoria's Secret and buy underwear, they, you know, whatever, they would know.
Yeah, and this is being proposed by the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, again, back in during the Bush administration, these kind of things were proposed by John Ashcroft, ACLU, various groups went crazy. Very silent. Now everybody's very, very silent. These are the kind of things that under the Bush administration would have caused a massive uproar.
Would have gotten a lot more attention than it's getting now.
A lot more attention. I think we have to really be careful here because, like I say, this will make privacy basically extinct. Whatever you do in your life will be tracked very, very easily. That's one problem I see with it. Do we really want the government knowing exactly what we buy, when we buy it, how we buy it? For example, if you buy certain drugs, they will know what drugs you're taking. The question is, can they use that against you? You're dealing with intelligence agencies who are in the business of controlling things. The thing that really bothered me about it initially was the fact that they could opt you out of the system. Okay, how many people listening to this program, when you've gone to the store and you put your debit card and a credit card and you can't buy, you've overrun your account, how does that make you feel? Lonely, yeah. Isolated? They could do this very easily. They could just put a hold on you. And under today's definitions of extremists and suspicious activity, I mean, they could stop you from moving in society.
That bar goes down, that threshold that they would need.
Yeah,
to,
I think in a monolithic society that we have today, a surveillance society, the more diversity, the better. Because, I mean, is the justification here is to make it easier? It isn't to catch terrorists, but it would seem to me that do we really want the government knowing what we're doing? That they would know everything about you. That's the problem with this. That's the initial problem. The second initial problem, I list a number of problems. One, I think it's going to make it a lot easier for hackers who are very adept at doing certain things, getting certain information.
Everything we do online generates an electronic profile that they can pretty much look at anyway, but this would raise it to a whole level of sophistication,
a
new level of sophistication.
If you charge something stupid, you do something stupid as a teenager, and years later you want to be a judge, you'll never be a judge. They'll pull that information up, and they will expose it to the public. I mean, this has been done over and over. I mean, do we forget that Edgar Hoover wiretapped Martin Luther King's phone calls, and an FBI agent actually wrote Martin King a letter and told him he should commit suicide. They were going to tell his secrets. See, I mean, the government's been doing this a long time. We just have to be careful who we trust with this kind of power. I mean, it dehumanizes us, in my opinion. So I think we have to really be careful. Yes.
Check out the full commentary at Rutherford.org. John, before we let you go, we got a few minutes left. Your thoughts about the very latest on the red light camera issue. And I know that you've seen some of this video, of the actual video that's been used and given to people to give them citations. They're not just taking pictures of license plates. They are full videos of the whole intersection. And you have said before that this really is about surveillance.
Well, it's about surveillance, but I think it's about money, too. I think, as David McNair shows in his very fine article he wrote for The Hook, which is online, you know, at The Hook, 412 tickets were issued in the first 26 days and about $21,000 in income. But here's the thing. If it's not about money, it's about safety, then why not give the option if someone – and a lot of this is going to come on right turn on red. That's where you're going to get most of your money, in my opinion. These are people probably not coming to a complete stop but are not dangerous. Why not provide safety classes people could go to? in lieu of paying the fine. That was tried in Tempe, Arizona, and Red Flex Camera, which didn't like it, so they've sued Tempe, Arizona. They want the money. They didn't want safety. So if we really want safety here, I mean, we've had people come by the office that have been put out of work for months. They've turned right on red at that intersection at 29 Rio, and they've gotten a ticket. And it's like, it's a $50 fine, but it's like $500 to them. Why not let them go to a safety class? So I think there are ways around. If it's really about safety, then my proposal is to the people in charge in Charlottesville is, and let's make it about safety. Let people go to safety classes, and let's make them safer.
Yeah, instead of
charging them a fine.
Charging them a fine.
Which if it's not about money. But if it's about money, then don't do that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So we'll wait for the county to respond to that. If it truly is about safety.
Let's have safety classes.
Have people take safety classes instead of writing a check or sending money to the Albemarle County government.
Yes.
Because those safety classes are out there for people who get points on their license. Yep. But there's no points for this.
Well,
fine. This
again,
is
the reason we're supposed to have the cameras is because of the danger of people running red lights. Well, we should really get people who run red lights, and I don't like people who run red lights. I think they should go to safety class and let's drop the fine.
Yeah, there's a lot of people online in conversations online saying, I have no problem with this. I don't care if the county makes money. This is all about stopping people running red lights. I hate people who run red lights. Well, I do too. I do too, but that's not really what's happening here.
Well, yesterday I was trying to cross that intersection. I was noticing the light going off. It was going off on people making those silly right turns where nobody's really endangered. No, it's not. Most of your red light running there is not going to be people crossing straight into traffic. No.
Yeah. John Whitehead, you can check him out online at rutherford.org. John, thank you so much again for all the work
that you
do, and I hope your shoulder feels better. It gets all better very, very quickly.
Me too. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.